Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3pm on WGXC 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today on the show, we have George Patterson. George has been a builder, a removal man, a tax inspector, a porter, a secretary, and a waiter. And he has pretty much sucked at all of these. However, for the last 30 years, he has also written and performed as a singer and a songwriter for the band White, the bands White and DMP, as well as being a regular contributor to various UK publications. He sucks rather less in this field. George has also written a TV comedy drama series about his disastrous efforts to break into the music industry. He currently resides just outside of London, England, but plans to return to Scotland in triumph following the latter's impending independence in September. George, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Andy. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for coming, George. We want to point out, George is we're FaceTiming from London. He's FaceTiming from London, so really incredible. But there may be a little cut out with the sound now and again.
Yeah, so that's a good thing, because sometimes listening to George is quite difficult. But most of the time he's okay.
Thank you, Andrew.
It's like an automatic censoring sort of.
Yeah, I think we can maybe edit that one out. But thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. I want to point out that George is the contributor of the beginning and ending music of the show, the introductory music, which George wrote. Did you write that yourself, George?
That's written in conjunction with my songwriting partner, Mr. Gordon Moyer.
Right. So we'd like to thank you,
Mr.
officially.
Moyer. And Mr. Donaldson as well.
Yes, we'd like to thank you officially for giving us the rights to use your music. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, George.
We would like to thank you guys for paying the royalties on it. So thank you very much.
About that, one of your henchmen stopped by. The check is going to be in the mail tomorrow.
No problem. We'll take that.
Now, George, you're saying here that you are a builder, a removal man, a tax inspector, a porter, and a secretary and a waiter. Now, I can remember your days as a removal man. Do you want to say anything about that?
I worked with this other Scottish halfwit, and we made a mess of quite a few removals, and we were paid very, very poorly, which we'd normally spend on a match ticket for a football game, or a curry, or a couple of alcohol-free beers that night. It was an interesting time in my life, put it that way.
And I keenly recall a house removal, or a house clearance rather, where we had to move the contents of a house into a van, and the guy had previously died in the house. And
it was one of those scenes
from a movie, like the guy's body had been cut out of the carpet, and it was like one of those scenes from a movie where you see the outline of a chalk person in the ground. It was like cut out of the carpet.
That was arguably one of my top three worst moments in employment.
Yes, I have to say I'm right there with you. Right there with you, mate.
Yeah, you were right there with me. That's why.
Now, George, you're also. It said you were a porter. Now I'm a porter, but by name. And
by name, yes.
Here in the U.S., I don't know if people are ever really referred to as porters. To be honest, I'm not really sure what that is. What does that job entail?
Well, I worked for a couple of companies just moving furniture around, you know, caretaker kind of role. Worked for a few companies down in England when I first arrived, when I was still earning money in the music business for a living. I did some, you know, temporary jobs as, you know, a removal man for companies, and that's basically what the porter was. They would ask me to move filing cabinets and boxes and all sorts of stuff around their offices.
Interestingly, lots of people ask me to move large, heavy objects, but I never get paid for it, so I guess that it's fitting.
Well, There you go. You need the contacts, mate.
Now, George, do you want to tell us a little bit about your TV comedy drama that you've written? It says you've written a large amount of stuff here, so would you like to tell us about it?
Yeah, I've been trying to break into the music industry as a young adult, then as an adult, and it tended to be with disastrous consequences. And mainly the disaster came from myself and my bandmates. We were very close to becoming successful on a number of occasions, but we tended to shoot ourselves in the foot at the most inopportune times. And a couple of years back, I was sitting having dinner with my soon-to-be wife, Lisa, and I was talking about some, you know, absolutely idiotic escapade we were getting up to. And she said, "Why don't you write this stuff down? It's actually really funny." And I said, "Well, no one would believe it." And she says, "Well, why don't you try and write it down anyway?" Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I wrote it down, put it together. And next thing you know, I've got 20 episodes of a comedy drama chronicling my life up to the point of about 25, 26. So.
Yeah, and I have to say, I've read all of it, so and it is excellent. And I really thoroughly enjoyed listening and reading and visualising a lot of the stories, which I can fondly remember or not fondly remember.
As the case. Depending on how much alcohol was taken. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Thanks, man.
And I actually, for my own sins, I appeared in a couple of episodes very briefly, I have to say. But,
you do.
But I thoroughly enjoyed reading them. So hopefully they'll get picked up soon and it'll become a show. And in 10 years' time, we'll be talking about the next project, the next TV project.
The success of Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, shall we move on to the first song? John, George, you pick your first song, which is Aretha Franklin, I Say a Little Prayer. Why did you choose that song?
It's a song that I heard first when I was about 15, 16, and I can remember precisely where I was when I heard it. I was in my mum's kitchen, where she still lives today. And there was a Sunday evening request show on Radio 1, which is the major radio station in the UK. And they played this song, and I hadn't heard it before, and it just absolutely blew me away. I'd never heard anything like it, and it's still, you know, 30-odd years, 30, 32, 33 years later, still my favourite ever song, Aretha Franklin, I Say a Little Prayer.
And she is a fantastic singer. She's been voted the number one top singer by Rolling Stone magazine, I believe, and won umpteen Grammys.
Forget all that. She's just there's something about her voice and the texture and quality in her voice just absolutely reached into me and slapped me about. It was magnificent.
Such a soulful singer, and you know, the gospel music that influenced her is obviously paid off. And, you know, as I say, there's such emotion in her voice. It's if you like soul music, gospel music, and you value the quality of a singer, then you can't fail to not like Aretha Franklin.
Absolutely. Here it is, I Say a Little Prayer by Aretha Franklin.
My hair now.
Was Aretha Franklin, Say a Little Prayer for You. Superb song, fantastic.
It's just magic, isn't it?
Yeah, great choice, Charles, I have to say. I love it.
Thanks, Mark.
Did you know that when she was a youngster, the reason I'm bringing this up is because Mike's here and he's from the area. She did stay for a short period in her life in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mike stays about 20 minutes from Buffalo, which is Batavia, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up. It's about an hour east of Buffalo.
So, yeah, so she grew up there. When she was about 2 years old, she went there. Her mum and dad split up, and her mother stayed in Buffalo for a short time. But then she moved to Detroit with her dad, and I don't know exactly whereabouts in Detroit, but her dad was a minister, and he was known as The Voice, a very powerful speaker, and was kind of a minor celebrity. He was called the man with the million-dollar voice. But I think he passed out.
Oh, does that make us talk?
the girl so with the $1 trillion voice.
Yeah, she's an honorary Buffonian or Buffalonian.
Buffalonian.
I don't know what the word is.
There isn't one.
No, okay. I'll throw that comment.
People that are really depressed and cold a lot.
Yes. Buffalo.
A Scottish then.
She's a Buffalo soldier. Uh-huh. There you go. So let's move. The next item you said that you were going to take, George, is the Encyclopedia Britannica. What's the reason for taking that? I mean, that's a lot of books. So
yeah, but you never said I couldn't, though.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Like that with me. So as I can't take Wikipedia and any technological stuff like that, I decided to go for the Encyclopedia Britannica. Basically, when I was a kid, the thing that got me into reading and knowledge, which is one of my big things, and usually trivial knowledge as well, was these set of encyclopedias that my grandfather bought for the family years back, and they were passed down and, you know, passed on to me as a 4 or 5 year old kid. So for somebody who had that sort of desire for knowledge, these were like manna from heaven. They were fantastic. I can still remember how they looked, how they smelt, how I can still remember the pages and the texture of the pages, and they were vitally important to me. and they piqued my curiosity. So it would have to be a really massive encyclopedia like the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I believe was started by two Scotsmen.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, yes. The Britannica is the oldest English language encyclopedia still being produced, and it was first published 1768 in Edinburgh, Scotland. As three volumes.
Hey, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
That's where our friend John lives.
Yes, John Roberts stays in Edinburgh. A lovely city. It's you can just smell the history when you're walking through some of these small...
It's probably Britain's most beautiful city, I'd say.
I would have to agree with you there. I'm sure there's some that run close, you know, Bath, Oxford, parts of London, parts of Glasgow. But for me, Edinburgh is such a beautiful place. You know, when there's nothing beats walking along Princes Street, the main street in Edinburgh, and seeing the castle at night time lit up. It's superb.
Well, it's spectacular, yeah. So Encyclopedia Britannica it is for me. That's the choice of book.
Now, do these books still exist, the family books, do they still exist?
I think my mother still got the dictionary. I think over the course of years we sort of they fell into a state of disrepair and we had to chuck them out, but she still got the dictionary and the thesaurus at home.
Right.
So still red leather bound, big thick thesaurus dictionary book. She still has that back at home in Glasgow. So
and when you go back home, to this day. When you go back home, do you flick through it and have a little trip down memory lane?
Every now and again when I'm back in my mum's, I spot it and I go, ah, I should really look at that. And then I decide to look at Wikipedia instead, which is quite sad. So
it's just so darn convenient.
Indeed, this, you know, it's modern technology has made the picking up of books almost obsolete. However, I do like the feel of reading a book. I'll still read a book.
Yeah, physically read a book. Yeah.
A paperback book. Yeah. I prefer the actual... the book itself rather than reading it online. But there is something about the convenience of things like Wikipedia that is that appeals.
You mentioned earlier the smell of the book. I was in the library and Mike was with me one day. We went to the library in the College of St. Rose and we walked down to the basement and I said to Mike, can you smell that? And he said, what? I said, the old books, that's the smell of education. Knowledge. And Mike was, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, Mike, you're more of a generation where computers were more used when you were going to college.
Yeah. My response was, whatever you say, weirdo, burning electric is knowledge to me.
I was trying to be diplomatic there.
I thought it was your cologne.
But, you know, the smell of old books is something that it first came to me when I was in the University of Glasgow, you know, in the reference sections and stuff like that, you could smell these old books, and it's just a unique smell, you know?
It certainly is.
The things of old. Now, talking about things of old, one of the things you want to bring with you, George, is a size 5 football. Now,
a size 5 football, yes.
Now, we have an American audience. Can you... make clear what we're talking about here and remember that a lot of the people in America are not familiar with the beauty that soccer can bring.
Well, the people in the States are becoming more familiar with football, soccer as they know it. It's becoming a very popular game over there. It's not just played by little girls and, you know.
Well, they're at the World Cup. They're at the World Cup, you know. We're not. Scotland
the
isn't.
World Cup in Scotland aren't, so...
the United States made it to the World Cup and Scotland didn't?
Yes.
They made it to the World
really?
Cup. They're actually quite good international sides.
Yeah.
They're not a bad international side, the US.
Oh.
Are they in England section?
Soccer, no.
I'm just trying...
They're not in England section.
I was hoping they were. That's what it was. I was hoping they were, because I wanted to...
I'd love them to be in the English section, then I'd be cheering on the US, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, a size 5 is regulation size soccer ball. And if I was given the choice, it would either be a size 5 mitre. Now, people in the States might not know what that means, but a size 5 mitre is basically regulation size leather bound 32 paneled soccer ball.
Yep.
And if I had that in front of me, I could, you know, as happy as I am with Wikipedia, you put a ball in front of me and I'm the happiest I'll ever be.
Yes.
Something about it.
It's the easiest way to distract a Scotsman from doing something that he shouldn't be doing or whatever. It's just throw a ball in front of him and that's him, you know.
Yeah. It just sends us off a different direction. You can always break a concentration a size 5 mountain.
That's
what I would choose.
The Scottish are restless. Quick, get the planes with the soccer balls and drop them all over the people of the land.
Drop them all over the place and then rob their banks.
You remember the cheaper versions, George, the kind of plastic balls.
There was one called Wembley, a Wembley Mold Master, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And they cost about £1.50, which is about $2.50.
Yeah.
They were very cheap plastic, but they just did a real good feel. The constitution of the ball was quite good, and it was quite true to, you know. It wasn't one of those balls you kicked that was like a balloon that floated off somewhere. It was quite a decent plastic ball. But because it was plastic, it tended to get burst on snagged nails and, you know, broken bottles and stuff. So you'd have to take it home and go into the kitchen and get a knife and put the oven on, or the gas ring on your cooker, and heat the knife up until it was red hot, and then get the knife on the ball and sort of smooth it like butter, red hot knife on the plastic
to try and cover the hole.
To cover the hole and then pump it up again. So most of us are these soccer balls with loads of little marks.
And sometimes they'd let ridges on them, and if it hit you in the face, you know, it could take an eye out, you know.
The feeling of getting hit by one of them used to be mitre dimpled balls. Used to have these like sort of rubber dimpled balls, and when you played with them in the winter, if one of them hit your leg, you'd be imprinted until spring.
Yeah,
it was awful.
You're bringing back horrendous memories, George. It's really,
it does. It's there's a feeling in your stomach, right there.
Yeah. Last Saturday, we had really, really heavy rain. Just for people who are listening in America, the weather was horrendous, heavy winds, heavy rain. And that's what it was like in Scotland. That's what it's like in Scotland a lot in the winter. But allied with
in the summer as well.
Allied with cold weather. And as you say, George, to be hitting the inner thigh with this ball is
that's the Death Star's weak point.
Terrible. It brings back bad memories. Oh. Now, do you know that, George, during an excavation project in Stirling Castle?
Found a mitre.
Yeah, they found a ball, and it turns out it's the oldest ball in the world. Well, oldest
really?
Known okay. ball in the world. And it dates back to, I think it's between 1540 and 1570, this ball. Approximately 436 years old. And it's now in the Stirling Smith Art Gallery and Museum, if you want to go and see it, anybody. But they reckon it was made of deer skin and pig's bladder. So
that's what the balls used to be made of. They used to be made of
a bladder,
bladder. That's what we called them, bladders.
Or a mitre bladder. Going back to what you were saying about the mitre. So it was like an outer case of leather, and inside was and sometimes when the little, you know, you mentioned there the 14 patches. If one of the patches came loose, some of the bladder would seep through.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody would have a really hard shot, and then you'd hear this, the ball would keep flying, but the inner bladder had burst, you know.
And it would fly in a very strange trajectory.
That's right, yeah. the memories. But you know what, George? You know, if you look at kids and you talk to kids these days, they would say that because of all the technology, all the games and the internet and all the stuff they got right now these days at their fingertips, they would say they're happy. But if you think back to, you know, when we were playing with these mitre bladders and been hitting the inner thigh with the plastic balls, we were far more happier because one of the things we had in our armour was our imagination to go out and, you know, create things. We made our own goalposts. We made our own pitches. We created the...
We were trusted to do that. You know, it seemed to be a simpler time where you were allowed to, you were able just to go outside without your parents fearing that you could be kidnapped and taken into, you know, servitude or slavery. You know, it's... Yeah. Which seems to be the worry today, because it's happened a few times, people have become very wary of letting their kids out their sights, and that's understandable, but there was a great freedom in what we had when we were younger. We were allowed to go out until it got dark from quite a young age, because there'd be people around, everyone knew everyone else, and they, you know, they'd look out for your kid if they were heading off somewhere, so without, you know, turning the past into, you know, the glory days. It was quite a nice feeling.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, George, another song that you would like to take is "Just Like a Woman" by Richie Havens.
Yeah. I loved Richie Havens. He was a New York-based singer. For those who don't know him, he was the guy who opened Woodstock.
Yeah.
The festival back in 1969. He was a very well-respected folk singer and guitar player, one of the most unique guitar players I've ever heard, and he passed away last year, just over a year ago he passed away. Yeah. And when I, after my first marriage broke up, I listened to a lot of Richie's music and it touched me incredibly deeply, and I, so much so that I wrote a song with my guitar partner Gordon Moyer. We wrote a song in praise of Richie Havens, called Richie Havens. I sent it off to him in the States, eventually found his address, sent it off to him in the States, and he got in touch with me, and we became friends after that.
Brilliant.
And I met him in London, met him in London 2000, I think it was, and went to a show and didn't feel, you know, I felt a bit, you know, embarrassed about going to see him after the show, but after the show he saw me, got a hold of me, he was giving me a big hug, and he was telling people, "Here, this is the guy. This is the guy that's written all these songs."
Wow!
And I'm standing with a guy just in total awe of him, and he couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been more sweet and humble, and a great example to anyone who loves music. The man loved music. He breathed, lived and died music, and he was a good soul, a really decent man, but with an incredible talent. So I've got a lot of time for Richie Havens, and the song that I've picked, Just Like a Woman, is for me the definitive version of the Dylan song.
Excellent. Let's listen to it. Just Like a Woman.
Thanks.
Richie Havens.
Nobody feels any pain. Tonight as I stand inside the rain, everybody knows the baby's got new clothes. Lately I see her ribbons and her bows, and the problem from her curls. Ah, she takes just like a woman, and she makes love just like a woman, and she aches just like a woman, but she breaks just like a little girl. My friend, I
have to guess that baby can't be blessed till she finds out that she's like all the rest, with her fog, her amphetamine, and her pearls. She takes just a like a woman. Yes, she does, and she makes love just like a woman. And she aches just like a woman. But she breaks just like a little girl. Oh, it was raining from the first, and I was dying there at first, so I came here. And your long time curse hurts, but what's worse is this pain in here. I can't stay in here. Ain't it clear? Oh, I just can't fit. I believe it's time for us to quit. And when we meet again and introduced as friends, please don't let on that you knew me when I was hungry and it was your world. Oh, you fake just like a woman. Yes, you do, and you make love just like a woman. And you, hey, just like a woman, but you break just like a little girl. You break just like a little girl. You break just like a little girl.
That was Just Like a Woman by Richie Havens.
Am I right in saying that Richie stayed in or was well known in the area of Saugerties and Woodstock?
Yeah.
Cause I saw
he's still highly regarded in those areas, I believe.
Yeah, I saw a few posters and going to a couple of music stores in Woodstock. I would see pictures of him, you know, photographs with Richie and, you know, some of the shop owners and stuff like that. So he's one of these guys, as you say, he's always a smile on his face, always looking to, he was a genuinely good guy, you know. So rest in peace, Richie. You're well missed, mate.
Now, George, another item you'd like to take to the cabin is a Yamaha guitar.
Yes, not just any Yamaha guitar, but my Yamaha guitar. I bought it when I was 16 years old. I spent about $300 on it many, many years ago, and it's been with me everywhere. It's been in the jailhouse and the pawnbrokers. It's been everywhere, and I've got it here with me now. And it's I've had many guitars over the years, but this one stayed my number one guitar.
So this is your trigger.
That's my, this is, call me Roy Rogers.
Yeah.
And, this, when I died, they'll mount me on this.
Willie Nelson's guitar is called Trigger. He said it for decades, so I'm referring to Trigger.
I thought you were talking about Roy Rogers and his horse.
No, Willie Nelson's guitar is called Trigger. So.
Oh, yeah, the one with the big hole in it.
Yeah, so that, I was referring to that being your trigger. So
George, could you play a little something for us?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, that would be awesome.
You like to play one of your own songs?
Yeah, I'll play a little bit of Richie Havens, the song about Richie, as we were just talking about
earlier.
Excellent. You might not be able to hear it very well, but I'll just give you a couple of bars of it, okay?
Fantastic.
Sure.
Given so much to me, open my eyes to see what it's like to be free. When Richie Havens sings, here comes the sun again, well I know it's all right here in my world.
Beautiful, George.
Superb, mate, superb.
Just awesome.
And where can we hear? Where can the listeners hear more of your music and that song in particular?
Yeah, if you go to thewhitewebsite.com, we've also got our YouTube page. You'll be able to see some of our clips. Gordon and I did a tribute to Richie Havens on our YouTube page last year. Just a little version of that tune. So if you go to www.thewhitewebsite.com. You'll find everything you need to know about the band White from there.
Brilliant. That's great, mate. Loved. That was a very crisp guitar sound there. I must admit.
I was looking a little into Yamaha. They're a really fascinating company.
Great.
Out of Japan. You know, they started off with musical instruments. Actually, something interesting I saw is their emblem is tuning forks that are, like, intertwined.
Yeah, that's what it is. I think it took me about 5 or 6 years to work that out.
Yeah, it took me 30.
I didn't know what the symbol was.
Yeah, 30 and Wikipedia to figure that out. But
right, okay.
Was it Britannica?
Yeah. Take that Encyclopedia Britannica. But and they do so much. Motorcycles, instruments, audio, video equipment, gorgeous sound equipment. Their speakers are usually pretty high quality, beautiful.
Yeah,
hi-fi sound.
Well, this guitar I've had for 32 years now. It sounds better now than it ever has done. It's just one of those guitars that I highly recommend them. If Mr. Yamaha is listening to me now, please feel free to send me a couple of those lovely guitars. I'll keep publicising them on Catskill Cabin's conversations.
I'm sure he's dead, the original guy.
Mr. Yamaha, don't say that.
I know, they have a long life expectancy
in
Japan.
Guitars.
I think Evel Knievel loved Yamaha as well. He crashed quite a few of their motorbikes.
He was a preferred customer. Motorcycle of the Month Club.
Oh, dear.
That's it, yeah.
Now, George, one song that you have put down as one that you'd love to take to the cabin is May You Never by John Martin. Would you like to talk us through why you want to take that song with you?
It's just one of those tunes that is about, you know, about love and friendship. If ever I was feeling a bit, you know, down about myself, I'd stick John Martin on and play a bit of his music. I just love the sound of his voice. I love the lyrics, and it's such a great guitar piece, acoustic guitar piece. He was one of the greatest exponents of it from our homeland, and it'd be great if he was remembered more than he is.
Well,
a lovely singer, John Martin.
You know, I'll be absolutely honest. I didn't know much about him. Like many of the artists that I find great appreciation in now, actually was the information was passed on by you. You seem to have a wealth of knowledge of music, which is fantastic for somebody like me who doesn't have a wide range of people to choose from. So when I actually looked at this guy on the internet, I found a lot of intriguing information, and I found his songs were beautiful, you know. And as you mentioned, from Glasgow, he went to Shawlands Academy and the art school, a great character. Now, one of the things I was asking myself, you know, he was very much into folk, jazz, rock, blues, but he was very big in the 60s in the folk scene. I wonder if, would you know that if Billy Connolly was somebody that he knew him, or?
I'm sure Connolly and him crossed paths in the folk scene back in Glasgow then. And John Martin was around, you know, he was playing a lot of the same kind of venues that Connolly would have been playing. Right. So I'm pretty sure, you know, their paths have crossed a few times over the years.
Yeah.
But John Martin died a couple of years back. Uh-huh. He was living in Ireland for the last couple of years of his life. Well-known problems with alcohol and substances, which ended up costing him, I think it cost him either one of his legs or both legs.
Yeah, I noticed that there was a documentary on about him losing his legs. Was that what it was about?
It's a gangrene in his foot, and they ended up having to amputate his leg. The documentary is fantastic because you look at him and you think he's quite infirm and he's starting to go downhill. And they took him to this pub in Ireland and did an unscheduled concert. Just said, right, John Martin's going to be playing here, because he hadn't played for a while. Took him to this place and the sound from him was just remarkable. You wouldn't have thought he was close to death at all. It was absolutely amazing. So if you get a chance to see the documentary, it's I think it's called I'd Rather Be the Devil, you know, based on one of his songs.
Right. I mean, I did. One of the quotes that I read from him was that, you know, he said, some people write diaries, I write songs. And I think that kind of epitomises what his music is about. You know, it's from the heart and it's about things about his life. One of the albums, I can't remember the name, I'm sure you do, the one that he wrote directly after the breakup of his marriage, which kind of signalled, like, the downfall or the demise of him as a person. You know, you alluded to the alcohol and drug problems that he had. I think that may have been motivated by the breakdown of his marriage. And the album...
I'd recommend anyone who wants to hear some quality music, quite deep subjects, played by a guy who was as close to virtuoso as you could have, with a really soulful voice. John Martin's right up there.
Yeah, and he's you know, held in the highest of esteem, you know, guys like Clapton and Gilmore and Scottish guitarists, what do you call him,
Bert Jansch is another one. Yeah. Bert Jansch was a great Scottish guitar player.
These guys
in the folk scene.
Yeah, regularly mentioned that they've been moved and highly influenced by John Martin. So,
John Martin,
this is May You Never by John Martin.
May you never lay your head down without a hand to hold. May you never make your bed out in the cold. Just like a strong brother of mine, you know that I love you true. You never talk dirty behind my back, and I know that there's those that do. Oh, please, won't you be reading mine? Love is a lesson to learn in our time. Oh, please, won't you be reading mine for me? To me, you know that I love you true. You hold no blade to stab me in the back, and I know that some do. Please won't you be reading mine for me. May I never leave strong brother of mine. You know that I love you true. You never talk dirty behind my back, and I know there's those that do.
Was the beautiful sound of John Martin, May You Never. Great choice, George.
Thank you.
Now, this next item intrigued me that you would like to take to the cabin in the woods, given that you don't smoke. I know why you want to take it, but you know why you chose this particular make, a Zippo lighter.
Well, I don't want to do any product placement in your show here. as you said, I don't smoke, but I would like to have a lighter just because I would hate to be cold and I would hate not to be able to cook food. It's simple as that. I would hate to be stuck having to turn into Bear Grylls for a week trying to rub sticks together because it's not my scene. So I'm not an outdoors person at all.
So have you chosen a Zippo lighter because you think that's maybe one of the most reliable lighters that you could probably take with you?
I would say so. I'd want something that's not going to... I'm not going to have to shake and throw away after about three or four uses.
Yeah.
So the Zippo, provided that's not the brand name, yeah, I'll go for a Zippo. As I say, I'm not an outdoors person. Camping doesn't agree with me at all. I like home comforts too much. Soft bedding and flushable toilets.
Big cups of tea.
Big cups of tea that I can make myself without having to, you know, fight off a Bigfoot to do. So, no.
Now, talking about reliability, now, apparently in the 1950s, a Zippo was found in a fish's stomach when a guy caught this fish while he was fishing. And when they took out the Zippo lighter from its stomach, it ignited after one strike.
and that's why I've gone for the Zippo lighter. You can put it in a fish's belly for years and it still works. That should be a slogan, an advertising slogan.
It's really the Job
Cook
of
the
lighters.
Fish from the
no, Jonah. The Jonah
of lighters.
Of lighters.
Yeah. That's the Job. Do you mind how valuable this lighter is in terms of its cost? Because you can buy an 18 carat solid gold Zippo, which is available for how much do you think it'd be worth?
18 carat gold solid Zippo, about $4,000.
Mike, do you want to do it, I guess?
4,001, Bob.
Ah, come on, that's not fair.
Mike, come on down, it's $5,000.
Bam.
That's not right.
Now, Georgia, another item you'd like to take to your cabin of the Catskills is a Swiss Army knife.
The reason I take that is, again, you know, following on from the Zippo lighter thing, I'm not very outdoorsy, so I'd like the knife, A, to help me cut things up, it's one of those multi-tool things, and also to protect me from bears.
Nice. And here in the Catskills, we do have.
Protect me for a minute.
I think maybe a bottle of mace might be more suffice for a bear.
Okay. Okay. Or a machete or something like
yeah.
that. I'd rather not get too close to it, but I'd rather have something that I can, you know, I can maybe stick a corkscrew in it or, you know, cut its fur or something. Just. So I'd like to have options, put it that way.
The bear finally left George alone when he produced the screwdriver.
He was like, okay, fine. Fine.
I'm off, that's it.
Forget it, man. I found the Swiss Army knife gets its name. The German is Schweizer Offiziermesser, which was hard for me to pronounce, as probably most Americans, like those in World War II, who had difficulty pronouncing the name and just went with Swiss Army knife.
Now, am I right in saying, George, you speak German?
I do.
Oh, when did you learn German, George?
I used to live in Switzerland.
Oh, no kidding.
I lived in Switzerland for a couple of years. So I'm very familiar with Swiss Army. And the Swiss Army knife that I want is the one that's about, you know, 18 inches tall.
Yes.
The big giant one you always have in the stores. That's the one I want. Swiss Army machete, I think it's called.
It comes with its own harness, like sling over your shoulder.
Yep. And a rucksack and a sleeping bag, all that kind of thing, yeah.
Very cool.
And the screws.
Bear repellent.
The screws that you'd be taking out with the screwdriver part are like 6-foot screws.
Well, you can't be too safe and secure, you know?
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Now, given that we're running out of time, George, I think we should move on to the last song that you've chosen to take with you once you put down the Swiss Army knife and you want to relax.
Yes.
Whispering Pines from the band.
Love it.
The band, obviously.
Yeah.
So, why?
I love the band. Well, I thought it'd be a good one to, and a good choice to end Catskill Cabin Conversation with a band that's did their greatest work in that very area. The band for me are just right up there. They're again in my top five bands of all time. I can't tell you why they speak to me, but there's something in their music, and the three singers that they had speaks directly to me. A lot of time for them, and I was very fortunate enough right about this time last year where yourself, Andy, played a little surprise on me and took me to the back of the woods in Woodstock. I thought I was going to get whacked, as they say. He took me to this this barn in the middle of the
Saugerties. Woodstock.
The West Saugerties, East Saugerties, whatever it was. It was, and you took me there, and it was the studio, the home studio of one of my musical heroes, Levon Helm. And I got to play Levon's drums last year at the studio, thanks to you.
That was
one of the biggest buzzes I think I've ever had, sitting on Levon's drum still playing his kit, getting a personal tour of the place. It was such a fantastic trip.
Yep.
And I'd love to come back to that part of the world. I had a real affinity with the Catskills and New York State, so I'd love to come back, and I'm looking forward to the next time I do take a visit to that part of the world.
Yeah, and it was particularly poignant because Levon had died a year before, just about a year after you actually got to play his drums. He died on April 19th, 2012, so it was a little bit more poignant than what it would have been had he not died, obviously.
I'd love to have met the guy, but I've got his music, so that keeps me going.
Yeah.
You know?
So, fantastic band. We'll play out the song that you've chosen, and Whispering Pines. Let's hear it. Inside my lungs. was Whispering Pines by The Band. Great choice, George. Now, sadly, we've run out of time. It's been great having you on the show. It's been a privilege having you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for
thanks very much,
on.
Andy. Thanks, Mike.
It's thank
great.
You, George.
Yeah, and, really enjoyed it.
Once again, thank you very much for the theme music. We really appreciate that. And hopefully we'll see you this side of the pond very soon.
Well, that's the plan. So if anyone wants to sponsor me, I'll more than willing, more than happy to come over and play a little gig.
Yes, and we'll see if we can get that sorted out. But for now, George, it's been great, as I say, and thanks for coming on, mate.
Bye, George.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Mike. Take care. Hi, I'm George Patterson from the band White, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. Special thanks to Gordon, Billy and me, I suppose, for the theme music, and from everyone else here at WGXC. Thanks.